Good afternoon and welcome back to the Western Plains Cultural Centre podcast. A slight, delay in a few episodes of several months whilst one person disappeared and that person proved to be the only one who knew how the microphones worked. So, but we found someone else who can do that, so we're back. And my name is Andrew Glossop, manager. We have with us today Carolyn Edwards.
Hello.
Assistant curator, Kent Buchanan.
Hi.
And collections officer, Jessica Moore.
Afternoon.
Okay, I thought we might begin with a brief precis of the past 6 months, of everything we've done and everything that's happened. Possibly not. Let's just move on to where we are now with Menagerie. Okay, now Menagerie is a very large collection of 3D works on the animal, all of them done by Aboriginal artists from across the country. And it's a sort of a joint production between Object, the Australian Centre for Design, and the Australian Museum. Kent, why is this an important exhibition?
It's an important exhibition because it's profiling an aspect of Aboriginal culture that a lot of people are probably not familiar with. Sculpture isn't necessarily something that people think of when they think of Aboriginal art. They usually think of paintings, dot paintings. But this shows a lot in terms of the complexities and diversity of Aboriginal art practice. And the range of materials and the range of subject matter within the exhibition makes the exhibition an incredibly
groundbreaking
exhibition. Thank you, Caroline. Groundbreaking exhibition that essentially appeals to audiences of a very wide
range.
Thank you.
Okay. Jessica, as the collections officer, what sort of materials have been used, and has that posed any particular problems in putting the show on or mounting it?
As Kent was saying, one of the great things about this show is its diversity, and that really is highlighted in the diversity of materials that are in play in the show. So we've got everything from traditional ceramics and weavings using plant material to using seaweed and offcuts of chain. So there is an incredible diversity of materials used, and used in really innovative ways as well. So in ways that we might not expect materials to be used. In terms of mounting the show, there's obviously an inherent fragility to these sorts of objects because they're made from, more often than not, natural materials. They will deteriorate quickly. They are at risk from infestation a lot easier. But it hasn't presented an awful lot of concern in travelling the show because they're quite kind of knockabout objects. They were made in a really kind of earthy, practical way, and they're not the kind of objects that you are inherently precious about. So in that sense, there's quite a relaxed atmosphere to the way the show's been installed, but it does mean that we have to be a lot more vigilant in kind of monitoring the objects because they are a lot more susceptible to kind of early deterioration as opposed to kind of chemically based materials.
Now, it seems like that most of these objects have actually been made from materials that they're not bought in art supply stores. They're just found by roadside or down
exactly.
The beach or the riverbank. Does that pause? You were talking about the fragility and the deterioration. Mm. Has anything been done to try and stop that?
I'm sure the objects have been. Majority of objects that come from natural materials, you treat them in a certain way in terms of ensuring there's no kind of infestation on them, so you can chemically treat them and things like that. But I think that you don't want to go too far that you make the works clinical. You want to maintain that connection to nature and that connection to materials that are more often than not things that you might see in your own kind of day-to-day lives that you don't really take notice of. So I think it's a very fine balance to work in terms of treating or handling or displaying objects made from natural materials or found materials, is that you don't want to make them feel disconnected from the audience. You want people to still look at them, be marvelled by the technique and the materials, and then go back to their own lives and look at the plant material in their gardens or the things that they throw out and actually think about how they could be turned into artworks.
Mm-hmm. Now, Carolyn, I know you've got a very particular connection to this show, but before we get on to that, what's one of your favourite works in the show? And I wonder if you could describe it and, you know, why?
One
one of my favourite works is the Denis Nonya sculpture. And one thing I'm not sure if we pointed out at the start of this podcast is that all the sculptures in the exhibition are about animals. The exhibition is called Menagerie, and the definition given is that it is a collection of animals and an exhibition of a collection of animals. And so right from the start, the programming team here knew this was a perfect show for the Western Plains Cultural Centre with its collection focus on the animals. So it's an absolutely perfect fit for us, and I think the audiences have really been responding well to that. And the exhibition is presented in a way that even the youngest children can get an absolute joy out of recognising the animals, and it goes right through the age spectrum. So back to the Denis Nonya piece. It's two stingrays that have been molded together. I really like it because he's using very non-traditional materials. He's using aluminium that's been cast, which is a really specialised process. There's hardly any artists in Australia working in this medium. And it showcases Denis's trademark intricate lines. Denis Nonya works in the far north Queensland. He's of Torres Islander descent. And he's won the Telstra Award for sculptural work, but he's most famous for his lino cuts, and they're the most incredibly intricate one piece of lino that is just mind-blowing. So I really like to see this artist who is stretching himself and he's using a material that he's not familiar with, and the results are spectacular. So I think that's what the show is about, that artists can, you know, take their trademark ways of working and do it in a different material, and the results are wonderful.
But I think one of the other interesting things about the show that comes across is, A, it's about the animal, and B, they're using quite ingenious materials. But thirdly, I think one of the interesting things is how closely spirituality and religion play in the exhibition as well, that a lot of the images are of almost totemistic, you know, kind of animals that have religious and spiritual meaning. And one of the works, for example, one of the first works that you come across when you enter the exhibition, the work by Owen Ulander, and it is a spiritual figure. And it shows this kind of balance between this kind of interaction between animals and spirituality, and sometimes that this creation of a third kind of spiritual animal figure that is not real and is a kind of creation. But there's a very strong, it's not just Indigenous people making images of animals, it's animals that have incredible significance and meaning and relevance to them and their community, and are very personal statements about how they feel about their country and quite often about ecological issues. So there are many, many layers in terms of how you can approach this exhibition.
Ken, if you could just sort of give us a brief history of the exhibition of... I've already mentioned the two bodies that sort of worked to bring it together, but how did they get together and what was the process and how long did it take before it actually arrived on the shores of Macquarie River?
The idea for the exhibition came about in around 2006, and it was at that stage that Object decided to approach the Western Plains Cultural Centre as a prospective venue. Because they knew that we were interested in animals, and so it seemed like the perfect project for us to take. Object came up with the idea in collaboration with the Australian Museum. Object, who up until that point were concentrating specifically on design and craft, became very interested in Indigenous art and crafts, as a way, I suppose, of extending people's idea of what constitutes design and craft. And so this exhibition was identified as important to them, and the Australian Museum, given their experience in collecting and displaying Indigenous collections from the Pacific, essentially, including Australia, were the perfect partners to bring on board. Over a sort of an 18-month period, Object's head curator at the time, Brian Parks, a young Indigenous curator named Nicole Forshue travelled all the way around Australia, visiting communities, speaking to artists, choosing works, commissioning works, etc., for the exhibition. And all those years later, in 2012, we finally get to show the exhibition. The exhibition was displayed in Sydney at Object as well as Australian Museum. So the show was so big that Object couldn't house it, and the Australian Museum could only house it in one of their galleries. So it was split. The beauty of the Western Plains Cultural Centre, of course, is that we have loads of space. So we were able to display the whole exhibition in one space. And those that have seen the exhibition in other venues have remarked that it's fabulous to see everything in one spot. And it's looked its best here. The other important aspect of the collaboration was that the Australian Museum raised the funds to purchase the entire collection. So it's now part of the Australian Museum collection once it gets back to the city and put away in storage.
And hopefully touring overseas, we've heard. I'm just wondering, yes, if you could name those galleries that aren't as good as us.
We haven't got enough time.
Now, one of the places I want to come back to you, Carolyn, because Kent mentioned that they toured the country, and you were working in one of the art centres in a remote West Australian site when they came to you. Can you tell us what it was like, I suppose, from the other end of the spectrum, from the actual producers?
Absolutely. I was sitting in the office and I got an email from Object Gallery, and they were requesting to use Shirley Purdy as one of the artists in Menagerie, and Shirley Purdy was the only artist in the community who was making sculptural work, and she already had quite a lot of notoriety for her painting, but she'd recently moved into sculpture. And as soon as I saw Object, I immediately opened the email and just jumped at the opportunity, because I knew how important the exhibition could be, and it was also such a unique concept. So I rushed straight over to tell Shirley about it, and she was very enthusiastic about it. So she created two works for the exhibition. She is quite a remarkable artist in that she is instrumental in the practice from start to finish. She doesn't outsource anything. She won't let anyone else near it. And she went out bush to collect the wood that she used, and it's actually quite an endangered wood now, Jalaloo wood, and she used the chainsaw to mould it, painstakingly carved it, collected the ochre, crushed the ochre, and produced three works for the exhibition. One of them was absolutely marvellous, but was so fragile that it couldn't even leave the art centre, and as far as I know, it's still sitting there. And that's one of the demands of a touring show, knowing that it's going to be on the road. And in this case, Menagerie has been on the road for 3 years and travelled hundreds of thousands of kilometres in that process, been packed, repacked, unpacked, repacked. So that did determine, you know, what the artist could make in all these cases. And being in a remote location, we didn't have a museum to pack the work up in, so we stayed up all to midnight one night constructing a makeshift crate and sent it off to Sydney. And I'm just absolutely delighted to have the opportunity to see the exhibition in full and to install it and to be instrumental in communicating its value and importance to audiences here. It's an absolute honour, and I'm just getting such a pleasure out of how much people are enjoying it and talking about it, coming back to see it again. Really worthwhile.
Was there much, besides the fragility and your experience, I suppose, and understand that this thing had to travel and had to be of a certain, robustness, was there much other direction given to you by Object, or was the art, it was basically, we would like an animal?
It was, we would like an animal. Nicole Forshue couldn't travel to all the communities. I know she travelled to a lot of them, but she wasn't able to come out to Warman, so the contact was all over email, and they had enough faith in Shirley as an artist to let her go for it, and I thought that was quite a freedom
Finally, if I could just go back to you, Ken, what does this say about this exhibition? What does this say about the WPCC collection of the animal and the sort of the breadth of, I don't know if I know experience is not the right word, but some other word, you can feel that in yourself.
Yeah.
The breadth of what it can do.
I think it's a fantastic exhibition in illustrating many of the issues surrounding the animal as a subject matter for a collection. With something like Menagerie, that show is essentially picking up on a really important aspect of Indigenous culture, number one. Animals are crucial to Aboriginal society, and therefore animals are held up as important, not only to everyday life but to the spirit, their spirituality. So in many ways it really puts forth a pretty strong argument in favour of the animal as a theme, and it's something that we're always aware of. We always knew that in human experience, animals are essentially travel with us along our journey, and in some cultures, much stronger connections are with animals than others, and so artists are presenting images of animals in very diverse ways, and even within Menagerie, the interpretation of the animal is quite diverse. You know, some of them are a sculpture that mirrors the animal. Others are giving us a sort of an essence of the animal through, you know, an aspect of the animal. So it's a really great show to look at in terms of the theme and thinking about animals and their importance to humanity.
Indeed it is. Now, Menagerie's on until June the 26th, I believe, and we've got both Brian Parks and Nicole Forshew are coming out in the next couple of weeks to actually speak. So have a look at our Facebook site or get onto the website if you want to get some more details about that. Okay, welcome back. A couple of weeks ago, Edvard Munch's The Scream sold for $120 million. I think Australian dollars. Well, that doesn't matter anymore. Australian, US dollars, it's all the same. The one world order. Does this say anything about the art world? Does it say anything about the artwork? Jessica?
Well, it says a lot of things about the art world and about the artwork. It depends on your point of view, really. Some people might think, my God, what a ridiculous amount of money for a single object. Other people might think, well, it's probably one of the most important artworks in the history of humankind, most recognisable, certainly. You know, capturing a moment of human anguish for $120 million is a small price to pay for the creativity within that object. But again, I think it comes down to whether you think it's too much or not enough or the right amount. It comes down to how much you value culture and how much you are willing to say that as a society we need to put a certain kind of cachet upon culture and we need to sort of discuss it in terms of its sometimes that means putting a financial value on it and sometimes not, but I think it's probably people tend to get quite outraged at this sort of value for an artwork, but, you know, they don't bat an eyelid when we spend, you know, similar amounts on the Australian Olympic team going to London, which doesn't affect my life whatsoever. So it's, you know, horses for courses a lot of the time, and it really depends, I think, upon the level at which you place the value on culture.
Carolyn, I believe you dropped out of the bidding when it got to about $110
million. Well, I mean, I just think how many people have been moved by that painting and how many students have empathised with it, and I don't think $120 million is much when you think of the impact that it's had on the art world and education, and even people that have not a passing interest in art would recognise that image and relate to it. So, yeah, I'm not sure whether a number can encapsulate that kind of emotion around an artwork.
But do they know it? I mean, can we put a figure then on Macaulay Culkin's Home Alone? Is that... Because,
well,
you know, it's a similar moment of anguish and something that people around the world can recognise.
Which yeah, probably wouldn't exist without the mummy.
No, exactly. I mean, that's part of the point. One of my feelings towards this is that it's got almost nothing to do with the artwork, in a sense, about the meaning of the artwork or its cultural importance. You know, I don't think anyone knows at the moment where it's gone, but what, Norway would be a fairly good guess, that someone in Norway has brought it back for what could only be, what, national reasons, to have it back on home soil, because that's important, I suppose, in some people's eyes. But you know, I wouldn't use the word ridiculous. I would use the word obscene. In the sense that in the cultural times when places like Europe and the US, you know, we've still, you know, England has gone into a double dip recession. People are getting laid off. You know, the Greeks and the French are being told they have to have austerity measures, and you know, jobs are being slashed and programs are being slashed and all the rest of it. But there's still this, you know, vibrantly disgusting. No, I can't use that word. There's still this vibrantly alive uber rich who have got $120 million to, in a sense, and I know it can be an investment, but if they never sell it, it's $120 that they have basically thrown away to buy one particular object, which I've, in this day and age, I find somewhat disturbing.
Somebody bought, you know, a French chateau for $120 million. Would that make the news? Probably not. It seems
it
to be
should.
This perpetuation of this
rope.
Idea that art is elitist, art is about the extremely wealthy, art is ridiculous prices for things that are just objects.
But,
if art was
but in this case, it's true.
No, but if art was just objects, we would not have galleries dedicated to them. We would not have courses where people study to become artists. We would not have gazillions of books written about them. If art was just about the physicality of the object, art would have died out centuries ago. So it's not, art is not just about the physical object. In cases, a lot more. And I think most of the time, what you're looking at with art, what you're appreciating, what you're talking about with art, is not the physicality, it's the impact it has on you as a person.
I'll just say that I predicted it would go for $100 million, but I was clearly wrong because it went for $120 million. I'm not offended by it. I'm not assuming that commerce should have morals attached to it. Something is worth whatever anyone will pay for it. And what we're really talking about is ownership. Regardless of who owns that painting and regardless of who has what they've paid for that painting, that that work has broken through essentially culture in such a way that it's impacted on all facets. I've seen it been lampooned by Looney Tunes and, you know, there's a whole myriad of ways that image has been used. But, you know, $120 million, you know, clearly that's what it's worth because that's what someone paid for it.
Well, then we have no judgments to make at all. But anyway, no, I can see that point. And my whole thing is this has got nothing to do with the impact of the artwork. I don't think that person bought this because it's had an impact on culture. They've bought it because it's famous, I think, and because it's, I would assume it's because it's from their home country. And it's one of four.
Yes, you know. Yes.
Anyway, tell us what you think. You can email us at info@wpccdubbo.org.au or post on our wall on Facebook, which is WPCCDubbo. Okay, that's about all the time we've got now for it. What's the excuse they use? Our satellite is dropping out.
Yeah.
So our satellite's dropping out. We have to go. Coming up next week, we're going to be discussing Where We All Meet. Kent, 10 seconds.
Daganyari Nangira, which is an exhibition staged in the Dubbo Regional Museum that engages with traditional Wiradjuri culture.
Okay, so until then, we'll see you all later. This is Andrew saying goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.